Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Walpin with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. This is episode number 80 of the RSP Cast with Dwayne McFarland. We are continuing our projection series of offenses for the 2019 season. And we did a long session that covered both the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cleveland Browns. Episode 79 is for the Cleveland Browns. This is episode 80 we're doing with the Steelers. And you may hear some mentioning of the Los Angeles Chargers at the beginning here. We were thinking about including them in a three-team session, but everything took too long because we got so in-depth with these projections discussions. That's one of the positives of that, but covering two teams is enough to actually do two different episodes or a team an episode at this point just because of the depth that we go into. So for those of you who are Steelers fans and can enjoy my ribbing of you guys as, you know, as being a Cleveland Browns fan, and trust me, you know, I am serious about how I look at the Steelers. I just like to joke with you guys a little bit. You know, hope you enjoy the show and stay tuned. Yeah. Well, we talked about having, you know, doing the Chargers here. We're not going to have time to do that. Let's give the full time to Pittsburgh, and we'll move on to send to the Los Angeles Chargers and maybe do the Chargers and the Raiders. You know, next week here, if in terms of time element here, and it'll give us a little bit. We'll get a chance to talk a little bit more about you know, the running game and you know, Melvin Gordon and all of that next week. But you know, the team, obviously the Pittsburgh Steelers, and when I saw that the Browns drafted Nick Chubb, I knew that the football gods had given me some mercy that he did not wind up a Pittsburgh Steeler, or he might have gone for 1,700 or 1,800 total yards if they got rid of Le'Veon Bell like they did. But now we have a team where Ben Roethlisberger has, you know, if you're a Browns fan, you like to joke that Ben Roethlisberger has pushed out Antonio Brown. He's pushed out Le'Veon Bell. Who else can he possibly push out of his team that was actually making him look unbelievable? You know, or you could look at it as a Steelers fan, which is more likely the truth, is that Ben Roethlisberger is a really good quarterback, you know, in his twilight years. And, you know, certainly Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell are both guys who, you know, wanted bigger money. The team didn't really want to pay them, and now we're looking at whether or not this offense can continue to thrive with Juju Smith-Schuster as a bigger cog than what he was, or can they strike gold again like they did briefly with Emmanuel Sanders, with Antonio Brown, and with Juju Smith-Schuster, and can they strike that gold again in picking receivers like James Washington and Deontay Johnson? Or will they be a team that, you know, looks more like a collection of misfit toys led by Dante Moncrief, you know, in terms of that receiving core? And then the same thing goes with running back. You did an excellent piece in the RSP site in your new series on Skew Your View with James Conner that I think sets the record straight about him and his likely usage. But you also have a really fascinating look at Vance McDonald, who I think, you know, I haven't heard anybody be as high on him as you. But then again, I haven't really been paying attention to thoughts on Steelers tight ends very much since Heath Miller. So this is a good conversation point for us to be able to start having with this team that is, you know, are they reloading or are they about to get picked off before they can even look down to find bullets?
And honestly, I think it could be either one of those. You know, I think one thing is very clear to me. Ben Roethlisberger is running this team. He's running it. I mean, he's running the offense. He's helping dictate player personnel moves, whether it's something direct or whether it's more of a backhanded thing. He's having a huge impact on everything that's going on there, just like what you laid out. And if you and I think if you look at last year, this was a team that, if you look at passing attempts plus sacks, 713 pass plays, Matt.
Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's like, should the analytics people, you know, and I am an analytics person, but I don't put myself to the extreme, you know, side of analytics, but this is what those folks have been screaming for, right? Just go out there and just chunk the ball 70% of the time. And, you know, they didn't do terrible with it, you know, but they also didn't do great with it. They missed the playoffs. So it'll be interesting to see how they rebalance, you know, this year. I've got the team at, you know, 1,025 attempts passing, which is the second most, 1,025 attempts overall, right, from a place perspective, which is second highest in the league. I've got them at 60% pass and 40% run. So I have them tied with the Giants, Miami, and Arizona for being the highest pass percentage team. Now, these are my median projections again. And you can see a lot of those other teams, they're going to be passing because they're going to be losing. Pittsburgh's going to be passing because it's what Ben Roethlisberger wants to do.
Right.
And so last year, that was a 67-33. So I'm a little conservative here, but I just, you know how I do this. I don't jump super outside of the box on my median. Now in my aggressive projections for Pittsburgh's passing offense, I've got them at a 64% pass and a 36% run, which I think is well within the range of outcomes. You know, one of the things that Ben has going for him is this offensive line is awesome.
Yes.
You know, and so that helps the situation. Despite all those dropbacks, only 24 sacks. Ben attempted 675 passes. And so that means Roethlisberger himself was on the field for 699 passes. He was only sacked 24 times, Matt.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's
a stud, and that offensive line is unbelievably good, which is why, you know, a guy like J.J. Zachariasen may look at that offensive line and go, oh, Le'Veon Bell doesn't matter.
Right. I think that offensive line helps a lot.
It does. It would help anybody. With it. It really would.
Yeah, and you know, and James Conner did show that, you know, so I can agree. So, I mean, if we jump over into what that means for Roethlisberger, you know, if we want to start with quarterback, you know, I've got him at 615 passing attempts. So I do have, and this again in my median, so I've got it coming down. I've got him at a 65% completion rate. I've got his yards per attempt at a 7, 4,300 yards and 28 touchdowns. I brought his touchdowns per attempt down some. I just don't see how you don't. Antonio Brown was really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think, you know, people need us to tell them that on a podcast. But I mean, when you're looking at projections for Roethlisberger, you know, he's had his years where he's been up over 5%. You know, he's been in that, even been in that 6% range. I'm just pulling it up in front of me here. So last year, 5% on touchdowns per attempt, the year before 5%, and the year before that, 5.7%. I just don't see how Ben reaches that with Antonio Brown gone. And I think one of the keys to Roethlisberger actually even being able to reach what I have him at here is they can't throw the ball 65% of the time. In my projections where I take Roethlisberger higher in attempts, I bring his touchdown per attempt down even lower, because to me, one of the ways that he is now going to gain efficiency on his yards per attempt and his touchdowns per attempt is he needs more of a balance in the running game. He needs play action working. It has to be more of a complementary team. And if there's one thing that you said, hey, are they going to reload, or is it just all going to fall apart on the Steelers? If I could point to one thing that concerns me, and I think I've heard you actually talk about this before, they're just not a big scheme team.
No,
it's just go execute. And when you don't have Antonio Brown, I really wonder how that's going to go. They need to play better complementary football.
Yeah. I joke that they're like the Broheem team of the NFL. Like they're just like they're the guy that has, like, you know, they're athletic, they're physical, they're tough, but they've got basically like three or four punches to their arsenal and not much strategy. And it's like, if you're strategic and trained and skilled, you can pick apart the Steelers. But you will feel it in the morning, but you can do it. You know,
see, but I think Ben and Antonio, like, they're going to both miss each other a lot. Antonio's going to miss having a quarterback literally be willing to just hold the ball and wait.
Yeah.
Because he knows he's eventually going to get open because Derek Carr won't do that.
No, not remotely.
And Ben Roethlisberger is going to miss having a guy that he could literally always count on to do that.
Yes.
It's going to hurt them both.
I agree, because where I have Ben Roethlisberger in terms of touchdowns per attempt is I have him at 28 touchdowns as well. And I have him at about 4% touchdowns per attempt.
And I think
where it's going to hurt him the most is the red zone. I think they're going to be able to throw the ball up and down the field and, you know, between the 20s, But then once they get into the red zone, that's where things are going to get tough for Ben Roethlisberger, because he doesn't have that experienced receiver who's going to be on the same page with him. And that's where it's going to get frustrating in terms of the touchdown totals dropping. I have Roethlisberger too high, probably, in terms of my pass to run ratio. I have him at 65%. So I have him at 675 attempts, which is still pretty darn high, at a 67% completion percentage, because I think that the Steelers will probably be playing more garbage time, and he's going to pad his statistics a bit more with this defense, with this inability to cash in the red zone. And then you're going to see them, you know, moving up and down the field, and the stats are going to look pretty, but he's going to take more sacks. He's not going to throw as many touchdowns. I have him at about 7.24 yards per attempt. So I have him at close to 4,900 yards passing, 4,890. So, you know, 4,890 yards, 28 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, you know, for this. But a lot of that hinges on who's going to step up in this passing game. And is there going to be enough to really step up in this passing game? Because the more I look at this, the more I think this is going to be a James Conner, Jalen Samuels, you know, and yes, Vance McDonald offense that's going to try and make up, you know, what's missing with Antonio Brown with some of these receivers, but they're not going to be able to make it up. Because I see James Conner, when I look before we get into the passing game more, in terms with the receivers, I have James Conner at 612 receiving yards. And I should be up in his touchdown totals. I have him at 87 targets this year, 68 receptions, 612 yards, just in the receiving game. And I think that where people missing the boat with James Conner is, you know, it's easy, you know, where I think the analytics guys sometimes where they can miss the boat on stuff is because they're looking at the data more than they're looking at the talent of the player. It's easy to look at a Le'Veon Bell and go, well, James Conner, based on draft stock, is just a guy. And you don't realize that James Conner, before he got sick and before, you know, things went south for him at Pittsburgh, at the University of Pittsburgh, was really a good running back prospect and a talented running back.
What do you think his draft grade would have been, Matt, before those things happened?
I think he could have been a second round pick. I honestly think that if he played, if none of those things happened and he was at the athletic ability that he's showed in the past, really last year, and he should have been at that. I mean, you think of last year, if he was at 90% of that athletic ability, he would have been no worse than a late second, early third round pick. What was he? Was he a third round pick or was he a lower pick?
Yeah, he was a third round pick. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure. I'll go double check it while you're talking.
Yeah. But, so yeah. I still think he could have been a second round pick. And if he had, but if we look at him and say he didn't have the health issues, then what you're also saying is that he had a chance to get stronger, faster, you know, more mobile and flexible, and his production probably would have been much higher. You would have seen some impressive things on the field. He could have easily been a first round pick, I think, if, you know, it just depends on the market and how people looked at his skill set. But, you know, big back who showed, you know, flexibility and receiving skills and enough burst to really play at that level. Yeah. I mean, I think that was that's possible, probable, probably not. You know, but right. You know, 10 to 15% chance.
Still, a second round pick in the league today is a decent, you know, and I think, you know, from an analytics perspective, I think there is something to replaceability, right?
Yes.
But I do think, but it comes back to teams being able to scout, teams being able to find the, and I like the stuff you and Jarrett Moyer have been working on, you know, scheme fits, right, with these running backs. Yeah. Finding guys that fit into what you're doing. You know, you have to have the skill within your scouting department and a general manager lining up, making those things align. And when you do, I do believe you can draft backs in the second and third round, and you can probably save money there and still be very efficient.
Yeah, I mean, running backs
from that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, running backs don't matter as much, mainly because, yeah, you're putting more receivers on the field and you're getting easier, you know, things in terms of, you know, throwing the ball around. And, you know, running backs at the same time, though, are catching the ball more, as Danny Tucito brought up in his work, you know, yesterday, talking about that, you know, they're the ones who, if you look at kind of the production, how that's been fueled. It's been more based on the uptick of passes to running backs than it has been the passes to receivers. But at the same token,
yeah, it's been the yardage and the, so what you're speaking to is the rise in passing yardage and targets. Who's accounted for most of that has been runners.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, but at the same time, I mean, you look at this and you just understand there's so many talents at that position, and there are only so many jobs now. You're not looking at two and three running backs, you know, or two running back backfields as much anymore as what you were in the past. And you're not looking as much volume for these running backs, even when they are the main guy, if they were, and people are getting smarter about injuries and understanding that they can manage these runners better and not just blow them out in the span of 1 to 2 years or 2 to 3 years. And, you know, that kind of goes into it, but James Conner is a talent, and he's a guy that I think a lot of teams would be very happy with as their lead back. And so, you know, you touched on that last year talking about, you know, kind of the context of why James Conner was used less and what, and also what his production looked like, even when they were using Jalen Samuels more. And I think that you're still going to see a guy who I have at about 265 touch attempts, about 1,200 yards, about 1,198 yards, 4.5 yards per attempt, and 15 touchdowns. I mean, I have this guy at a high level. I think he's borderline top five back in this league because of that offensive line, but I think I have him at more of the ceiling of expectation. And we have to understand too, that this passing game is going to need to work a fair bit in order for that running game to achieve those types of numbers. And that's where I'm a little scared.
Right. Yeah. We are almost exactly in alignment, you know, for the second time on runner in the show. So I've got him at 267 attempts, 4.5 yards a carry, 1200 yards rushing. Now, where I'm definitely lower than you, I see 15 touchdowns as, you know, that could be in the edge range of his outcomes. You know, it's just hard to score 15 rushing touchdowns in the National Football League. So I've got him at 10, which is still very healthy. That's still a very healthy number. Now, and you made a really good point about him as a receiver. What people don't realize is before he got hurt last year with the high ankle sprain, so if you just take him through week 13 and then you extrapolate that out to the season, he was on pace for 277 carries, 1,274 yards, 16 touchdowns. Matt's like, yep, got him at 15. And then he's got 72 catches for 658 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's the thing that I think the narrative that and it's not necessarily a narrative, I guess, but it's a thing people are missing. What I see people jumping on the Jalen Samuels, and I like Jalen Samuels as a gadget mismatch weapon.
Yes.
But James Conner is good in the passing game, and guess what, folks? When he's on the field, the defense doesn't know what's happening.
Yes.
If Jalen Samuels is on the field.
Draw play, maybe.
Draw play, yes, or he loves to run kind of those wide sweeping plays. Yeah. Once teams catch on to what Jalen Samuels does, and oh, by the way, he cannot pass block at all. Like, zero. And it's not his fault. No. He
was a tight end.
Matt Williamson, you know, had a conversation with him at Steelers camp, and Jalen Samuels told him basically, look, man, before I came here, I was never asked ever in college to block anyone. If we were throwing the ball, I was in a route. So it's not necessarily all on him, right? He could be learning a skill that maybe he can get better at. But at the same time, James Conner gives you the element of surprise. He's a better receiver than people think. You still have to respect the run. And Jalen Samuels is a great guy, though, that can help if they will get more schematic, like we talked about in the beginning. Yeah. I do believe a ton of Pittsburgh season depends on Fichtner and Ben have got to get together, and they've got to say, okay, we're not just going to be 100% execution, you know, based. Like, you just get open and I'll wait for you. Jalen Samuels can fit very well into this offense and help offset the loss of Antonio Brown. I just don't think it's going to come at the expense of James Conner.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Ben Roethlisberger is like Fred Flintstone with his club, and Fichtner is trying to be Kazoo with the little alien guy, if you remember that cartoon. And I don't think it's going to work all that well. But certainly, you know, Fred usually finds his way to have a happy ending. So I think that we'll you know, we'll see if Fred Roethlisberger, or excuse me, Ben Roethlisberger can, you know, can continue to pace this team. I mean, and when we look at it from that perspective, that means where are we at with Juju Smith-Schuster? You know, I wrote a piece on him where I said, you know, his ceiling is, I mean, his floor is much lower than people realize. If you take away Antonio Brown and think about whether or not the Steelers can replace him as a threat where safeties have to occupy or be preoccupied with the deep ball from guys like James Washington, Deontay Johnson, because if they don't respect those guys in the deep game and they can pay more attention to Juju Smith-Schuster and put a guy over top and start taking away some of those intermediate and deep throws, like those, you know, say, I think I took away what it would look like if I took away last year's targets where he caught passes, I think somewhere over, you know, somewhere, I think 20, I mean, I think over 16 yards and higher, and took away those passes, what his yardage might look like if you minimized his impact in the, you know, 16 yards and beyond. And when you do that, you're like, now he's like a wide receiver three, you know, which still tells you that they're not going to take away all of that, obviously. I mean, even if they don't respect, even if opposing defenses don't respect Johnson and Washington enough, that they start bracketing Schuster more and they start covering him with their best guy on a regular basis, you know, maybe Schuster, you're going to see a drop in that. So for right now, my projection for Schuster, I have him still at the high end, but that floor to me, there's a trap door in his projections, if you ask me, and it leads to a pit that may not have spikes in it, but even that mattress down at the bottom of it isn't going to be a comfortable landing for people expecting a mid-range wide receiver one and getting a low-end wide receiver three or even a low-end wide receiver two. I have him at 166 targets, 111 receptions, 1,400 yards at about 12.8 yards per reception, 7 touchdowns, which still, you know, is still really nice production there for him. But I see myself more likely to ease him back than to maintain those numbers. How about you?
Man, here's the way it looks for me is just, and I totally hear some of those things that you're saying. And I think that efficiency is an area where you could scale him back. From a volume perspective, though, I mean, the guy had, you know, 165 targets last year. You know, he was on a per game basis. He was his target share was 23%, you know, he played every game. Antonio Brown was a 25% at 15, you know, of the games. So I basically feel like just with Brown being gone, his floor for targets is around 27%, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was 30%. So for me, it's just more of a, I think from an efficiency standpoint, there's concern. From a volume standpoint, I feel like, you know, would it surprise me if he had 200 targets? It wouldn't, right. You know, I mean, just because, I mean, Ben has also shown us that when he has a guy, he has a guy, and he clearly likes Juju. Now, the other thing with Smith-Schuster is, you know, he plays a lot of his time out of the slot. They move him around. So if they will, again, this is back to scheme, and this is why I brought this up. It's going to be huge that they can be more schematic in their approach. Yeah. You know, so last year he played 59% of his, he was a slot receiver 59% of the time. So that protects him in a lot of ways because it's a lot tougher to get press coverage plus a bracket, right? A lot of times it's still off coverage plus a bracket. Juju's pretty good at option route type stuff. He's pretty good at working the intermediate areas of the field and gaining separation. He's pretty good at contested catches. The positives for me on Juju, because whenever I had heard you actually, you know, it was something with Football Guys we were doing when I heard you talk about Juju in this manner. And so I like just went back and re-looked at him again. And, you know, so he faced zone 45% of the times. He destroyed it. 75 targets, 51 catches, 4 touchdowns. He shredded zone. Then, man, 38 targets, 24 catches, 3 touchdowns. So he was also really good against man. Now, if teams can figure out a way to get more press coverage on him, that's where he does drop. It goes down a little bit. His targets, 24 targets, 14 receptions, no touchdowns versus press. So I just don't know how much teams are going to be able to do that with how much they put him in the slot. So I agree that efficiency could become a problem. But right now, volume wise, I've got him at 165 targets like you. Actually, I think you said 166, which is right where I've got him. I've got him at 108 catches. That's a 65% catch rate because of the area of the field that he works. And I've got him at 1,300 yards. Now, in his floor, I agree with you. I think you could see something like what we've seen from Jarvis Landry in the past when he was literally the only game in town on his team. Yep. His yards per catch were a 10, working the same areas of the field as Juju. And so for me, to your point, that's where the trap door is. Obviously, I think touchdowns as well. I've got him at 8, but would it surprise me if he was at 6? No.
Yeah.
If you do that, you know, I've got him at 1,300 yards right now. But if you drop his yards per catch down to 10, to your point, around the trap door, that's 1,080 yards, right? So,
I think schematically how you would explain that, because like I think he did a great job of showing, you know, how he shredded zone coverage and how he faced what he did with man. But you also have to understand with zone coverage too, you know, a lot of zone principles are you're playing who. Yeah, it's about who you're respecting too. The safeties are respecting, and who are they letting, you know, fly underneath them. And as good as Juju Smith-Schuster has been, you know, when you have the fear of Antonio Brown, beating you deep as a safety or not accounting for Antonio Brown, that's kind of like that's like the football equivalent of having the fear of God, basically, you know, in terms of, you know, what you're dealing with. And, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster may be a mythological hero in Steelers lore, but Antonio Brown was basically a mythological god of wide receiving. When you had to choose one or the other, you'd rather let the slow guy beat you and come back and try and get him later. And hope that whoever's covering him underneath is going to be able to help out there, as opposed to
Brown. His splits without Antonio Brown over the last 2 years, and this is a very small sample size, so just take it for what it's worth. It's 3 games. He would have been on pace in those games for 107 receptions versus his normal 92, 16 touchdowns versus 7. Targets 144 versus 134, and receiving yards 1360 versus 1258. So, and again, you can't put a ton of weight in that. Right. It's only 3 games. You know, whenever teams fully know this coming into the season and they're planning to take Juju away versus that was an NFL team stuck in, you know, the middle of the season, you know, getting their film work in for the week and then trying to adapt to Juju Smith-Schuster versus really understanding every single component of his game as a lead receiver. You know, I think there's an argument to be made there. But for what it's worth, I mean, it didn't kill him, you know, in those games so far. And I don't know how much you can put in.
Yeah, because if I'm the Browns and the Bengals and the Ravens, I'm going, you know what? Can James Washington beat me deep? Let's see if he can do that. Let's just put, you know, let's put our best guy on Smith-Schuster and have him follow him around. And we'll put, you know, we'll put safety help over James Washington. We'll put safety help over Deontay Johnson and see if either of those guys can do anything. We know that Ryan's Switzer just has trouble extending his arms to a football. And Dante Moncrief is a fade route player who basically every team gets attracted to after they watch his highlight clips and somehow forgot to watch what he did the rest of the time on the field. He's like that promise that always is broken, basically, as a player. I mean, he's, you know, when I'm bad mouthing these guys, I mean, again, Dante Moncrief is a very good receiver. He's a professional caliber guy. He's just never really made it to being a top end guy and isn't as great as a route runner as you would need him to be to really vault himself into the starter conversation. So when, you know, the issue for me is you look at a guy like James Washington right now, and if it works out, I have him at 120 targets, 88 catches, 1056 in terms of yards, 12 yards per catch. So the deep element of the game is really kind of missing here for the Steelers in terms of, you know, what I'm looking for here. I have him at 7 touchdowns. And to me, this is like a very high ceiling for Washington. Even though he was a huge deep threat at Oklahoma State, he's not extremely fast. He's just very skilled at being able to get by people. And I wonder how helpful that's going to, how good that's going to work out for Pittsburgh, who doesn't scheme very well, like you said. You know, if he's just matched mano a mano, is he going to be more of an underneath guy than we expect? And then, you know, Deontay Johnson, I have him at the next best at 87 targets, 42 catches, because I, as much as everyone's talking about how they see the Emmanuel Sanders kind of skill in him, and I do see a flash of, in his game. Like, there's some things that flash in his game where you go, this guy could be a good starter in the league. I also saw a lot of mistakes as a senior that I just couldn't get past. Like, just a lot of play that didn't integrate well, and not being able to get off press, not running the routes he should have run, concentration lapses. I have him at 42 receptions, 460 yards, and close to 11 yards per catch for 3 touchdowns. And so the rest of this for Roethlisberger, I mean, I'm looking at the running game, you know, the running backs and the tight ends here, because Switzer, I have, you know, 166 yards, Moncrief, I'm underselling vastly, and I probably need to bump him up more, but I have him at, you know, I have him at a paltry like 112 yards and a touchdown for the year before they just submerge him. But
it's, now that's a floor.
Yeah, I have him. I mean, I do. I just have him at rock bottom. But I know that that's not true. If they can give love to Darius Hayward Bay and make Darius Hayward Bay like get him in the range that he's had over the years, Dante Moncrief certainly can do that too.
Yeah. So a few quick things. I'm going to talk about reading the tea leaves on these guys, but one more quick thing on Juju, just, you know, to kind of paint what you're talking about. A thought popped into my head when you were talking about teams taking away Juju. This, and it's a very similar player, and it's also very similarly used. This happened to Michael Thomas last year. Once teams started putting a nickel back on the field against the Saints, or a dime back, depending on the formation, to take away Alvin Kamara so that they didn't have to bracket Kamara with a linebacker and a safety. Once they started doing that, they just said, fine, you're in an obvious passing down. We don't think you're going to run a draw. We are going to literally, we're going to cover Alvin Kamara like a receiver. And we're going to bracket Michael Thomas. Did you know Michael Thomas, and that happened around mid-year last year. Okay. Dallas was one of the first teams to do it. And then everyone started doing it. This was Michael Thomas's pace before folks had him, had figured out a way to combat it. 1,700 yards, 160 targets, 10 touchdowns, 140 receptions.
Wow.
Once teams figured it out, it dropped to 1,050 yards.
There you go.
Versus 1,760. And the touchdowns dropped from a 10 to an 8. Receptions weren't terrible. They were still at a 110. But again, you didn't say Juju's not going to catch his balls. You felt that efficiency was one of the major components that was going to be an issue. And I think this is a good example, and that's from a master schemer.
Yes.
Sean Payton can scheme it up better than, you know, as good as anybody.
Yeah, we're talking about the Jetsons versus the Flintstones here.
Exactly. So I just wanted to point that out because I think it does really paint that end of the floor to Juju. You know, if folks are wondering for fantasy, I'm targeting Juju every time I can in the mid-second just because – the volume upside is so huge. I'm just going to deal with some of the efficiency stuff. Volume is king. And if I've got to look at him versus, say, you know, pulling the trigger on someone like a Damian Williams, I'm going to lean to Juju Smith-Schuster. Just, I trust it more. But I think your point is very valid, and this is a real-life example of that playing out. Now, I mean, on to the rest of the Steelers. It's funny to me. I love what you just said about Dante Moncrief and your floor literally made me, I was taking a sip of coffee in it, and most of that sip is back in my mug. So I'm not going to drink any more of that. But with Moncrief, what I see is if you read the tea leaves, and I've spent a ton of time, Matt Williamson, you know, helped a bunch, you know, with this. I talked with him about this, asked him, you know, what his thoughts were, and he's at Steelers camp, and then reading everything I can. A lot of people are starting to just skyrocket Dante Moncrief, you know, up their projections, you know, so from in a fantasy standpoint, like he's jumped like 7 or 8 rounds in the last, you know, month. And when I read those comments, what I don't read there, I don't read a guy that I think is going to see 15 to 20% of the target share. What I read when I see it is he's the guy they expect to replace Martavis Bryant as a field stretcher, Darius Heyward-Bey as a field stretcher, Sammy Coates as a field stretcher. He's going to be the vertical element in their offense. What they want James Washington to be, now whether or not he can do this, is the guy more they use the way they did Antonio Brown. Now, he's obviously doesn't have the separation skills or the route running skills that Antonio Brown does. But James Washington is the guy that I think Moncrief can execute on his role. I don't think he's going to see 20% of the targets like people think. I think he's going to be the guy that basically, whether just the he's open
every week, like Sammy Coates and Darius Heyward-Bey and who else? Oh, Martavis Bryant, who was actually pretty good. Okay, I'm sorry.
He was great. But it's the tactical element. As lazy as they are on scheme, right? It's just sometimes it's just about just chunking it down the field and making the defense know you could do it.
Throw
right?
the big guy I think in there.
It's going to be – and, hey, Ben is actually really good at that pass. So Moncrief's going to have some weeks where he'll hit, but I think it's going to be inconsistent. I think a lot of this hinges on James Washington, and it's so much unknown with him. I've got him similar to you, Matt. I've got him at 15% of the targets, so that's 92 targets. I've got him at 51 grabs. That's only 55% catch rate, just because I don't know if he and Ben are going to be able to get on the same page, right? The way, I mean, he and Brown, it was like, you know, they knew each other. It was simpatico, right? Yeah. You know, it was like you complete me kind of stuff before they got so mad at each other. You know, so I've got him at 740 yards and 4 touchdowns. I will say this. I think James Washington, you know, a lot of people are ignoring him, you know, completely in projections. I think that's wrong too. He was a young player last year. You know, he was on a team where he didn't get a ton of work because they already had a lot of established, you know, guys that they could put into the pecking order. It's not a team that has traditionally involved third and fourth and fifth guys. It's been, hey, here are the two guys, run everything through them. So I don't know how much of it you put on James Washington versus how much of it you put on how much did they really work to involve him.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know the answer. So I've got him right around fairly close to where you do. I've got him a little lower. I've got him lower than you on touchdowns. Now, the guy, and this brings me to Vance McDonald, which is one of the guys that, you know, we opened up with. The one thing that I've seen with McDonald is, you know, a lot of people point to his drops. And drops are, from what I've seen and I've studied them, you know, from a statistical standpoint, they're a very noisy statistic. What I've noticed with it, and it's based on the way they're charted. Different websites chart them different ways. And you really need to go no further than that. If you go compare what two or three different websites have charted for drops, you're going to see pretty drastically, I don't want to say real drastic, but drastic enough. You're talking 10, 15% differences in numbers, sometimes 30% differences. What I've noticed is when you have bad quarterback play, receivers get more drops. And I think this comes back to something that you talk about with your quarterbacks. There's pinpoint accuracy, there's general, and then there's general accuracy. And I think for a lot of these guys, so if you go back and look at Vance McDonald's time when he had 25, 30% drop rates, which are insane, and I went back and started watching these things. They were late throws where he had two guys all over him and already batting the ball and a general accuracy pass. If you got two guys around you, it's got to be pinpoint. General won't work anymore.
Nope.
You know, I saw passes where he's wide open on a drag or on a post kind of route where he could use his athleticism against a linebacker and some of his speed. Not the greatest route runner ever, but against lesser guys in coverage, he can get open. And then I would see the ball thrown behind him and the defender would catch up and knock the ball down. I don't know how that's being charted with every one of these sites. Yeah. But what I noticed is with Ben Roethlisberger, oh, guess what? His catch rate went way up. Last year on catchable passes, he caught 75% of them.
Yeah.
You know, so actually that's on his targets. If you go up to his catchable stuff, it was like a 96%. So the guy, I think, gets a bad rep for his hands. I'm not saying they're the greatest thing ever, but for the type of routes, you know, that he's running and the type of coverage he's going to see, I think he can be fine. The year before with Ben Roethlisberger, he was at a 65% catch rate. The years before that, he was like down in the 50s, but he was playing with really bad quarterbacks.
True.
The 49ers didn't have a quarterback. So when I look at that, that's why I start to lean to Vance McDonald. I'm like, you know, we don't know for sure what we're going to get out of James Washington. Dante Moncrief is going to be asked to stretch the field. Deontay Johnson's a rookie from a small school who's got a lot of problems that you're concerned about him integrating together. Sounds like he's a year or two away. Ryan Switzer's got his own issues. Eli Rogers is actually a nice player. We'll see what they do with him.
Right.
But Vance McDonald, to me, is the guy that Roethlisberger started to lean on a little bit more last year. Between him and Jesse James, they had right at like 16% of the team targets. So I've got Vance not even picking up anything really, not much from Antonio Brown. I think you have to baseline him as just he plays the full-time tight end position, and if he's healthy, he's going to be around 15%, which is 92 targets. And I've got him at a 67% catch rate, right? So not – I still accounted for maybe the guy's got a little bit of a drop problem, but overall it's been better the last few years. So that's 62 catches. And man, the thing I love about Vance McDonald's game is if you get the ball to him in space, boy, he's got an, and now this does also, I think, play into his injury history. He's like a Kelce or Gronkowski with the ball in his hands. He will bring it to you. He is not going to shy away. He's got good acceleration. You know, he does not shy away from contact. He's very aggressive with the ball in his hand. So I like that part of his game. So I've got him at 750 yards receiving. That's 12 yards per catch. And I've got him at 5 touchdowns. But I think he's got an upside, you know, depending on how things go with those other guys, he could easily be at 20% of the targets. He could be the next trusted guy, right, behind what we would see with Juju.
Yeah, and I think I think he can definitely be one of the top three guys in this offense. But if he is one of the top three guys in this offense, things are going wrong. That's what I think it's going closer towards going wrong than going right, because they really do need that second receiver to be strong. And they need one of Washington or Johnson to step up. And I guess, you know, you could add Moncrief to that equation. I will not be getting love mail from the head of the Dante Moncrief fan club this week, that's for sure. But Vance McDonald, I have him at 78 targets. I have him at about, you know, at a 68% catch rate at 53 receptions, 651 yards at a 12-yard per catch range, similar to you, and at 4 touchdowns. But again, it's based, you know, you can see as we've done these projections that the kind of the pressure points here are the second and third receivers for the Steelers, which is the collection of two of Washington, Moncrief, Johnson, how you do them, how you look at Connor's receiving, you know, acumen and what his upside is going to look like. And then how that impacts Vance McDonald and how Vance McDonald is there. And I think you mentioned Eli Rogers. I like the way you mentioned him, because honestly, Eli Rogers is the type of guy that how would I best put it? He's like the airbag in the Steelers offense. Like if we see him at anywhere near 500 to 600 yards receiving, then the airbag in this offense has gone off and the car has stalled.
Somebody get an ambulance to the scene.
Exactly. And it will probably be an orange and white ambulance that will be just driving by waving with Baker Mayfield in the front seat, probably at that point, you know. So as you can tell,
it could have some purple on it.
It could have some yes.
It could have some Baltimore purple.
It could definitely have some Baltimore purple on it. But at the same time, Baltimore might be like might be at the hospital waiting to operate, you know? So,
no, Baltimore might be like, we actually caused this crash and we're fleeing the scene.
That's right. Getting away. That's right. Or the people on 285 here in Atlanta who tried to make off with $275,000 worth of money that got spilled out of a Brinks truck. You know, so either way, this was an interesting
one. I think simplistically, though, just real quick, Matt, I think I like the way you just laid it out at the end. You said, I see Vance McDonald potentially being the number two or three target in the offense. We see it the same way. In my baselines, I've got Vance and James Washington both as the two, both at 15%.
Yeah.
Juju's clear one, but he needs some help, to your point, or his efficiency probably is going to suffer. You know, I always revisit everything I've done after you and I talk. And honestly, after sitting here and seeing the Mike Thomas example that like popped into my head, I'm probably going to drop Juju from a 12.3 to about 11.5 yards per catch just to hedge a little bit in my median projection. You know, then in my upside projections, I'll still leave him at like a 12. You know, he's not a guy that's ever going to be at 13 or 14. He's going to be within that 10 to 12 and a half range, right? So I'm probably going to lower his median a little bit more. But I have the clear number three right now in this offense, you know, and actually I guess it would be the four technically since there are two twos. I have it as James Conner.
Yeah.
And then I have Jalen Samuels working in for 7% of the targets. I've got James Conner at 14%. So I think Jalen Samuels is a guy that they need to figure out how to get more creative with and do some things with him, because I'm, to your point, I just can't get confident about any one of these other guys as really being able to take on a huge burden here. I think they've got to get schematic and they've got to spread out Antonio Brown's stuff over four guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And as I do the same thing when we have these conversations, I think James Conner's touchdown total is going to drop. Juju Smith-Schuster, I'm probably going to be more emboldened to embrace the trapdoor a little bit more with him, and drop him a little bit in my rankings. James Washington is a guy that I want to revisit a little bit, but I'm not sure exactly what I want to do with that. Dante Moncrief is just going to get a, yeah, Matt, now you've gotten that out of your system. Go ahead and bump him up a little bit, you know, even though I'm still not drafting him anywhere.
Quick, Matt, just let me ask you one question. Sorry. So let's say, giving some actionable advice, right? You're watching James Washington this preseason. What are you looking for at his game to tell you that he's taking a step forward, and why we may want it? What would trigger you to think, you know what, Dwayne, we might want to be more bullish on James Washington?
Who was the wide receiver out of Oregon State who Sammy Coates, the one who they threw lots of corner routes to that Ben Roethlisberger overthrew all the time, who I liked as a receiver? I don't remember his name. But anyway,
I don't know either.
If he's not getting that treatment, that will be a good start, where he gets the routes that Roethlisberger doesn't like to throw, but they throw anyway. If as long as he's getting like dig routes and he's getting open on dig routes, he's getting open on comebacks and out routes, hard breaking routes. I want to see him winning on timing routes in the short and intermediate range, you know, and building off of that. If they're scheming him on these deep crossers or deep corner routes that Roethlisberger, I just anecdotally watching, seems to overthrow over and over and over again, and that's what he's getting in terms of targets, you can go ahead and just forget it right now. It's just going to be a frustrating season for James Washington. So the in-breaking and out-breaking hard routes that work on timing, if he's winning those and winning those either with good separation or winning in tight coverage and the ball placement's good with Roethlisberger, that tells you that they're in, you know, mid-season form and that things are going to work out for Washington most likely.
Awesome. I'm taking my notes.
There you go. Well, this was awesome. I certainly have taken my share of what, you know, Dwayne McFarland has had to tell us once again in this projection series. We will look at the Chargers and the Raiders next week, most likely. You can find Dwayne McFarland's work. Is it at Context Matters or at Dwayne McFarland?
No, it's at Dwayne McFarland. Yeah. I just put the Context Matters up there to confuse you.
Yeah, that good. So well done. at Dwayne McFarland, you can find him on Twitter. And of course, he's going to be doing some projections work at the RSP, that newsletter. Those of you who subscribe to the RSP, you get the newsletter every month. We're going to have some work from him, some projections work that's going to be exclusive to RSP subscribers. And he also has a forthcoming article that's going to be about how he does projections. And if you don't know this about Dwayne is a high stakes fantasy player who's had a fair bit of success, you know, doing this kind of work. And that's not something that we've talked about a lot, because I'd rather just share about the fact that Dwayne knows some football in addition to the fact that he knows some stats. But I thought for those of you who are, you know, interested in what he does and have gotten a lot of good feedback about what, you know, Dwayne's work, I thought I'd add that little tidbit in there for the rest of you as well. You can find his work at Football Guys in addition to the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. And, you know, thanks again for all the great feedback that you guys have been giving, and have a good week.